Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 5 of my tracking series. And in this episode, I had the privilege of discussing the topic of man tracking and its applications with European man tracking instructor Kit Lynn Walken. Kit and I delve into the many ways that man tracking can be utilized, from survival scenarios to anti-poaching operations and so much more. We talk about the differences and similarities between wildlife tracking and man tracking, some historical situations where man tracking has been employed, and some resources for people to begin learning the art of man tracking. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Wilderness and Wellness Podcast. I'm your host, Ron Wallin. This podcast is an exploration of the ways that people can reconnect to the natural world through bushcraft, naturalist skills, and time spent immersed in the nature they find around and within them. We also discuss how this reconnection can increase our individual well-being and that of our communities and the earth. Thank you for joining me. I'm really glad you're here. Hello, friends, and welcome back to the podcast. I know it's been a while since I posted my last episode, but I have some ideas to remedy that. I am a little busier, as I said in my last episode, and so I will be posting episodes less frequently still. However, I've got some ideas on just trying to put a little something out there that, you know, takes up less time production-wise, and but will still keep me in contact with you all, and I think that'll work out. So we'll see how that goes. For now, though, I have a really fun episode here. Was wanting to have someone on to talk about man tracking. And Kit Lynn Walken, who is the guest for this episode, has a really strong online presence and is an extremely well-known and skilled tracker in the European area. And so I thought it'd be fun to reach out to her and have her come on. And we had a really great discussion. And I will kind of forewarn you, Kit has a really good command of the grammatical nature of the English language, and she also has a very thick accent. However, she just speaks very, very well with tracking and does so good with it. So, I did go ahead and put together a transcript for this episode. So if there's some parts, that you have a hard time with, feel free to refer to that. So just to kind of introduce Kit, Kit Lynn Walken is the first female man tracking lead instructor in Europe, an authentic trader of this ancient art that is still so effective nowadays, from search and rescue, tactical dimension, forensic science, and wildlife conservation. She has been entitled as the official representative of Hull's Tracking School in 2018. Mike Hull is her mentor, and she has become a conservation ranger after attending a 2-week course in Poland led by CROW, that's CROW, Conservation Rangers Operations Worldwide. Kit Lynn has also studied forensic photographs on crime scene, held by the UK forensic advisor and former SAS Robert Kendall. Currently, she runs man and animal tracking courses all over Europe, and she's a regular writer for some prestigious US and UK-based webzines on survival, off-grid living, and prepping. She has been entitled the, and I might butcher this here, Directora de la Escuela de Rastreo Humano Carcayu in Spain. She is author of The Manual, The Importance of Being a Tracker, available in English and Spanish. And without further ado, here is Kit. Well, that's the cool thing about tracking is it's a universal language.
Absolutely. Even if I have to stress out that the people from UK use a slightly different words to identify tracks. For example, they use spurs as a term, right, which is not so common in the United States. Actually, I never heard the use of the word spurs to identify tracks, micro tracks, disturbances, and so on. Yeah. But there's a reason why, because that word came from the Danish language, Sporleten, and it was acquired from the South Africans. So as the British army often in the past work side by side with the South African, they kind of acquired and traded on the use of the word spore.
Okay, interesting.
kind of a curiosity, let me say.
Yeah, that's cool. The only time I can recall hearing the word spore in relation to tracking is typically with more tactical tracking and man tracking and that. Or even over here in the States, I've done some work with David Scott Donnellan, and he uses that. And then I know Ty Cunningham did a, I forget if it was a master's or a PhD thesis on you know, recognizing spore and whatnot. And so it's here, but yeah, definitely not as much, especially in terms of wildlife tracking. It's not used.
Exactly. No, wildlife tracking is very uncommon. In tactical tracking, yes, because David Scott Donnellan, he actually wrote a book, Tactical Tracking Operations, which is an institutionalization. I'm sorry, it's a very long word in English to spell. And he actually wrote down the Rhodesian method of tracking from the Salo Scouts. And the Salo Scouts were from Great Britain. So that's why they still use the word spore in tactical tracking. So,
yeah.
I got a spore, I lost a spore, I'm uncertain.
Exactly. Yes. Yep, that's perfect. Cool. So how long have you been tracking? What and kind of just tell us the story, like what got you into this and how long you've been doing it and all that?
Yeah. Let me say, I've been an enthusiast of the great outdoors all my life. I kind of took advantage of my childhood and going to the Alps with my parents doing very small hikes. And then later on, around 2012, I began to approach the survival scenario, survival skills, making knots, starting a fire, campaigning, using the tarp, and so on. All basic stuff that we all know inside this podcast.
Right.
Later on, it grew on me the dream of learning how to track, because my father is a real fanatic of Western movies. 100%
likes the westerns, huh?
Exactly. And I grew up, you know, with Lee Van Cleef, with Clint Eastwood, with Sergio Leone movies, and I was so astonished by this.
All the old spaghetti westerns.
Exactly. Yep. That spaghetti western that was shot in Spain and not in the United States.
Right. Yeah.
But it was cool, and I started looking on internet in order to find a school where to learn this skill. And I found the European, how do you say, version, let me say, of the Dennis Cadona Tracking School, and representative they are. And I attended three courses with them. And later on in 2017, I got occasion to attend to the Blade Show in Atlanta, and then moved to Virginia to attend the class of Tactical Acuity for CID, which was led by Michael and also Cornelius Nash, who is an exceptional tracker, who's based in Texas. And David, was kind of impressed by me, and I'm still so grateful for him to turn me the official representative and official instructor for the World European area for school.
Nice.
So I started leading my old classes all over Italy, because I don't have a physical school here. I don't have an entity, but I just move from one spot to another, from the north of Italy to the middle to the south. And I have also have the chance to take part to the Bushcraft Show in UK last year, and you know, have a public speaking on the benefits of man tracking still today. So nice.
Yeah, very good.
That's the main features of my whole story in tracking.
Right. Very good. Cool. And thank so, you. Tell us a little bit more about the art of man tracking. How does it compare to wildlife tracking? Because of course, in this podcast, we really focused on nature in that, and so we talk a lot about wildlife tracking and whatnot. But man tracking is very similar, obviously, but there's some other things to be considered. And I wonder if you could tell us about that.
It is the very basics are just the same, because you have to. To detect the right tracks, you have to read them, to interpret them and then to follow. So we have four different phases in wildlife tracking as well as in man tracking. The main difference is the mentality, because when we follow a man, we have to follow a person who probably in quite 100% of the cases made a sort of reasoning behind the moving from one spot to another, from alpha to omega and so on. Animals, instead, they behave by instinct. So they reach their feeding areas, their sleeping areas, move by their instinct, their habits, natural habits. Instead, a man or a group of person are moved by a sort of reasoning on the goal and the intention to reach a specific purpose, because they need to reach an area for that kind of reason, or they have to meet with another person for that kind of reasons, and so on. Plus, we have a main difference also in how the tracks left by humans appear on the soil. Because in case of animals, we look for signs of disturbances, of claws, of hoofs, and so on. It depends on the type of the species of the animal. In the case of man, in most of the cases, we wear shoes, and we obviously need to face with the pattern of the shoes. And what is the pattern? Is I'm sorry, just use a slipper. No, it's not as if it's a thumb. Me to understand what is a pattern is the design of the sole. If right. we see something like this in nature, it, such a regularity, as it calls in the tracking terminology, is definitely left by a human individual and not by an animal. This is exactly, it is common sense, obviously, but if you have a proper terrain with a proper percentage of humidity, and this kind of terrains, as well for man tracking, as well for wildlife tracking, are called track traps, because they retain the pattern of the silhouette of the tracks, are more likely to show you the pattern of the shoe or the shoes, if we refer to a group of individuals, no matter if they are men or women, child, and so on. Another thing to consider is the fact that if we spot a good entire track and not a partial one, we can collect so many data from the person who was wearing it and was leaving the trap. If it was a male or a female, if it was younger, it was older, it was carrying a load, a rucksack or a bag, where the shoes are left shoulder or right shoulder or something, imbalance in front of the beam over, and so on. So many, many details, which turns to be the database, let me say, of a tracker. Exactly. Wonderful. I can talk for hours, so you need to stop me. Tell me, kids,
sure. No, you're doing great. Okay. No, that's perfect. So if I could just kind of like, I guess, re-summarize. One of the main difference between tracking a human and tracking animals is kind of the mindset and the intentions. Exactly. Animals are very driven by their instincts. They're looking for food, water. I know with animal tracking, there's kind of a push or pull. And I suppose the same thing could be said for tracking humans, man tracking. There's a push or pull. You know, there's something that's maybe pulling a human towards something, whether it's a settlement or an objective they're trying to get to for whatever reason. And then perhaps there's a push, you know, for instance, I can imagine if someone is, a fugitive and they're trying to hide. But if the trackers are getting close or if they feel threatened in some way, it's going to push them out of their hide and they're going to take off, you know?
Exactly.
And so I could see how it could be both easier and harder to track a human, because animals, I can imagine, are very reasonable and their instincts are very set, whereas humans can sometimes be very unreasonable, and sometimes I can imagine it would be hard to determine what their objective is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but at the same time, since we are humans, we can kind of understand the way they think a little more.
Exactly.
If we're to try to put our minds in the mind of an animal. And so it's that's a kind of an interesting dynamic there in my mind. And then let's see, one of the other things that you spoke of is the data that we're able to get and the our ability to notice human tracks, I guess, probably more readily because of the patterns of the soul creates a pattern that's very not often seen in the natural world. And so
well, quite never, let me say, because of the geometry, the
right.
Or there's a kind of a design triangles. You have small circles like a beehive, for example, Converse shoes, and so on. It is absolutely unnatural in nature.
Yeah, definitely. And so, like animal tracking as well, we're looking for trap tracks, places where people, you know, if we have one particular person that you're tracking for whatever reason, you can get a lot of information from the whole track and the trap. it's a mouthful sometimes. But and you were saying, you know, you can tell if they're carrying something, you can tell if it's a male or female, their height, based on the relative weight as well, based on the stride and the depth and all those other things, the size of the shoe and all that kind of stuff. So it's amazing. It's always amazing to me the amount of information that one can obtain from looking at tracks, especially to people that don't know what tracking is like. It's really amazing how accurate one can be looking at tracks, you know, if they're well versed in the art of tracking. Even sometimes to the point of being able to tell things in someone's track that you wouldn't be able to tell by looking at the person themselves, such as injuries, things like that. So that's always really fascinating to me. So let's move into basically some modern applications for man tracking. What can this skill allow us to do? What is it effective for doing? And how is this skill applied in the modern sense?
Well, we have a wide range of fields of application of this art. Some of them are extremely ancient, even if before the colonialism period, which has been a sort of a great spotlight for the use of tracking all over the African colonies of the European countries. We still have some remarkable use during the Indian Wars, since a lot of Native Americans have been employed as scouts by the USA Army. And then again, we have an application of the tactical tracking during the Vietnam War. And since that kind of that specific frame of time, later on, the use of tracking has been kind of, you know, dismissed a little bit. Let me use this word. And he kind of slowly got into oblivion because people at that time, it was more prone to think that the technology kind of, you know, replaced the use of this ancient skill. But the kind of, in an unexpected way, back in 2007, has been reintroduced inside the USA Army program for Afghanistan. Because people realized that the application of tracking for detecting the ID, there's an improvised explosive devices, could be extremely useful in terms of saving lives, saving money, saving all the resources and gear to for the USA Army. And talking about instead of the search and rescue dimension, in a lot of countries we actually speak English, for example, New Zealand, Australia, Great Britain, United States as well, the use of man trackers inside the search and rescue team is still priceless for several reasons. First of all, you can't only rely on dogs because dogs are great. Dogs are really great, let me say, all over the world. Because if you have, if you can trust on a highly trained dog, you can actually find the person in what, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Right. It depends on the weather conditions. But if you run across a day with bad weather conditions, and I mean a violent storm, such a cruel wind, let me say, like a tempest, dogs are more prone to lose their sniffing, as you say. And in that specific case, the pairing of a tracker with a canine could be a good solution to successes in the operation.
Yeah, okay. Take the benefits of both and put them together. Exactly. Kind of make up for the difficult parts.
In case the tracker may lose the track, you have the dog. In case you have the opposite, you can use the tracker.
Right.
So put them together. It's been and still it is the best solution to look for, in my personal opinion, not only mine, of course. And then again, you have the patrolling of the famous or unfamous border with Mexico, because in that specific area, in the Sonora Desert, most of all, you have certain spots with bushes tall like this. And a person like me and Mexican are not known for being extremely tall, that can hide. Okay. And in that specific case, the use of drone has been kind of useless, because a drone can't detect if a person is hiding himself or herself near or under a bush. And the use of trackers on tracks and patrolling several times the same, tongue of soil near the border is a extremely remarkable silas nowadays, even if we have so much technology at our disposal. Then as another context, we have the forensic tracking. But let me say that each country has got its own procedures for the application of this art. Because, for example, here in Italy, we don't have trackers for the forensic. The how do you call it? The scientific police, in Italian is polizia investigativa, here just come to the crime scene, look at the ground, if and only if they spot one track, they could consider to keep it as an evidence. Okay? But they aren't able to reconstruct a wall track line from, for example, an outdoor scenario like a private garden, the courtyard, and so on. And an indoor scenario like a home. And as a very last field of application, we have anti-poaching and wildlife conservation. And in this specific field, we have man tracking paired to wildlife tracking, because wildlife tracking is 100% focused on monitoring and doing researches in order to to preserve but also to facilitate the conservation of the wildlife, especially in countries like Africa and Asia. Man tracking instead is only applied to the hunt of poachers. And I know that it is could be that your next question, and I'm trying to englobate my answer.
No, that's perfect.
Because there's a bridge, and in my speech, and most of the time, poachers in Africa are former wildlife rangers. That's extremely sad, but it's all due to money. It's all a question of business. Because being a poacher means earn so many money in a so much brief period of time, short period of time. You can get easily rich. Instead of being a wildlife ranger, means that you have a fixed salary, but not so high, just an very average salary.
And I can imagine, having been a wildlife ranger, one can get a good idea of where the animals are and kind of already have a little bit of that.
Exactly. They know exactly how many individuals of lions, for example, you have, how many elephants, how many cubs of tigers in Asia and so on.
Yeah. So I can see how that would be. It would be an easy transition, unfortunately, to go from wildlife ranger to poacher. Exactly. It's like dangling that carrot in front of you all the time. Hey, look at all this wildlife that's worth so much money, and my family's starving, and it's a very unfortunate situation all around.
I don't want to go deeper inside this specific point, but very often poachers are also extremely close to terrorists from the ISIS, because a source of money for them is actually selling tusk ivory and so on. So tusk for the elephants, ivory and skin of lions, parts of the genitals also, because sometimes in the Asiatic medicine they are considered like a panacea in Italian. I don't know the word in English. It could be panacea because it is an old Greek word to cure all the possible disease that you may have, especially cancers and so on.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. So how, you know, we've talked about the applications for forensics and let's go a little more into anti-poaching, if you will. So how can tracking be used to detect and find poachers and maybe even, you know, save animals who might be in the act of being tracked for being poached and all that kind of stuff?
Quite all the wildlife rangers are good trackers, because tracking represents a sort of a cornerstone on the whole training program for wildlife rangers. Because man tracking can be applied for two different purposes, which are, in fact, they are linked to each other. The first one is tracking poachers in order to spot if they have set any traps for animals. Most of the times these traps are wires made of a rusty iron. They are called snares, and they are like a circle shaped, and they are set near the bushes. So in this, they work as by strangle. So in that case, any kind of animal can be trapped from like lions, elephants, rhinos, and so on. And obviously, the animal will die by extreme bleeding. Okay. And one of the tasks, in fact, of the conservation rangers is to look for tracks on the ground, especially in savanna where you have that soft soil made of sand. Just follow the tracks and spot the exact point where the snares and the traps has been set. And the other task is just look at the ground, follow the poachers and see how many they are. If they are carrying rifles, especially in Africa, the two most common weapons are AK-47 and the shotguns, because they're very easy to find on the black market, let's say. And search for their campfires during the night and see if they have created a sort of hole in the fence in order to get in, just cut down and break in inside the fence. So sometimes the rangers also, if they are working inside a huge reserve, they track also using like a small jeeps. Small cars, small trucks, and they just put themselves at the very edge of the, I don't know the word in English, I'm sorry for that part of the car, but in the very front, and just spot the tracks.
Oh, I see.
And follow them just to cut time, save time, you know, and
cutting for sign, basically. Yeah.
Exactly, because a cut for sign is exactly that. Spot for the right track line to follow and get it done. And every day is the same.
Interesting. And I imagine this is a very dangerous job, because like you said, the rangers, which have turned, you know, which sometimes turn poachers, so the poachers themselves are good trackers, which means that they would likely employ a lot of anti-tracking techniques. Absolutely. and set up ambushes maybe and things of that. I can imagine.
They actually the most common anti-tracking technique employed by porters is just to use very flat shoes with no pattern at all. Okay, like it was mentioned by Davis Cordona in his books. That's why the sales scouts
didn't
wear that kind of shoes, because they kind of confuse the local guerrilla, because the tracks just look exactly the same with no the definite pattern, no specific design, sole of English made boots and so on. And but the other methods is most of the time also to use improvised explosive devices. Sometimes if they have any kind of knowledge in setting small bombs or stuff like this, they sure will employ that, especially if they until, for example, a big elephant for cutting the tags and putting on the black market.
Interesting.
But there is a variety of anti-tracking techniques that I could speak for hours.
Right.
They're all extremely creative. They just depend on the situation. Poachers do what it's needed in that specific scenario at that specific frame of time and place.
Right. That makes sense. So let's move on to survival. How can tracking be used in a survival scenario, for instance?
Well, I kind of covered this topic several times in some articles that I wrote from some news.
Oh, wonderful.
We'll
post links to those in the show notes of this episode.
Yeah, that's just people can, if they are willing to learn, to read them and just maybe learn something new. If they don't, they can actually spot it on my website on Kit Publications, and then you have the wall list of the wall attached.
Perfect. Yeah, we'll put a link to that for sure.
And it is a in my personal opinion a sort of a unavoidable combination between the tracking and survival, because if you have to survive in a specific situation, you need first to apply your tracking skills. It's like doing reconnaissance. For example, if you have to set a safe camp for the night, you obviously will look for tracks of predators. If you want to use a cave, you will surely look at the ground if you spot any flying tracks for mountain lions, for example. We don't have mountain lions here in Europe, but we still have lynxes, which usually do not attack men, but you never know. Okay, you never know.
Right.
So looking for animal tracks as well as for human tracks in order to understand if there is any kind of evidence of a passage, it always be a very good first step to face when you have to survive. And then again, you can apply wildlife tracking skills in order to understand if there are funnels, if you can set the tracks, traps, sorry, for small animals like hares, rabbits, squirrels, and so on. So also looking for tracks a bit like this. So micro tracks, it will help you to understand if you can maybe spot the remains of some walnuts, for example, chestnuts, hazelnuts, and so on. Because squirrels do eat and they just leave the shelter on the ground. It's not something that I personally invented or invented someone else just for the book. It's just common sense. Just see to collect as many details as possible, put it all together, and create a figurative puzzle in your head. This is a safe area. I will more likely to do the camp right here. And it is a good way to go. Or no, it's not safe because I spot some weird tracks on the ground and it looks me like a little bit unsafe. Right. So I will avoid that. It's just this. And plus, in the further, possibility, you have to spot for other strikes in order to find a way to come back home sound and safe. Or backtracking yourself, because if you get in the middle of nowhere, you have no GPS, no batteries, and you send a lot of videos and messages to your friends telling everyone, oh, I'm such a cool place, but oh no, I got no battery at all. I'm screwed. What you can do is just turn yourself back and backtrack yourself.
Yeah.
If you're able to do that, it could save your life.
Absolutely. Yeah, and one trick I learned from a good friend is to help not get lost to begin with, is as you're hiking or walking through where you're at, just turn around and look back every now and then, and it'll put that mental image of what that looked like. So if you do have to actually turn around and backtrack yourself, not only will you have the spore and the your own tracks to use, but you'll have the mental images that you took on the way there to kind of know, okay, yeah, I recognize this area.
So. Yeah, I recognize the tree, or I see that the signals.
Right.
It happened to me, for example, at the beginning of this year, I was in Texas, in central Texas. And I was, just making a simple hike, and I was so sink, let me say, in that scenario, but it looks exactly the same. Because you have some mesquite trees all around, you have this area. And you have no reference points, okay?
Right.
Even if I was just sticking on the main path because it was so recommended by the authorities, also due to the presence of snakes and
right.
So on, I just want to avoid any kind of problems.
It's Texas, after all.
It is. Even if it's a very, that area is kind of luxurious in terms of vegetation. It's really, really nice. It's a Colorado Bend River National Park, should be.
Nice.
But I just noticed that I didn't have any kind of main reference point, because all looks exactly the same. Like being in the desert, which is one of my favorite environments to be in, but hey, you are in the desert. You can't rely on that cactus or on that kind of plant. You just that, being able to do something more.
Definitely.
I don't want to sound too much boring. I advise you, I can talk for hours.
Oh, you're great. You're doing great. So give us some ideas on how one can learn to track. And maybe man tracking specifically, like what are some, if someone's really interested and curious in this art, how can one go about beginning to learn this thing, this skill?
My recommendation is not to rely only on YouTube videos, first of all, because back in the day, I did the very first mistake, because I was just looking at the videos on YouTube, and most of them are absolutely brilliant and very well made, 100%, I told you. But you have a 2D vision of the tracks. Instead, the tracks are in 3D. They have their own depth as well.
Yeah.
So you need to bring yourself out in the field and start doing what is called in the tracking terminology, dirt time. But first thing first, go to a good school. There are a lot of amazing schools in the United States. You have Dennis Codonna, you have Michael, you have Ty Cunningham, you have Fernando Moreira in Nevada. You have a lot of schools. We can teach how to track humans and how to do that in the proper way. A specific thing that I always consider is the terrain, because for example, if I live in near like Virginia, where my instructor lives, you have there's a very pleasant panoramic area with hills, the Blue Ridge Mountains. And by the scenario over there, and the terrain, obviously, depending on that, is the opposite. If you live in an area like Arizona or, New Mexico and so on, So yeah. My recommendation is to find a school close to your state, near to your area, because you need to track in your own area first.
Mm, that makes
and
sense.
It makes sense, right?
Definitely.
People who are willing to learn how to track, and they just send me messages, oh, Trikita, I just wanted to attend one of your classes on the Alps. The Alps are absolutely amazing, but they are highly contaminated because there's a lot of hikers
right.
and climbers too over there. And especially if you live in a state with no mountains at all, like Kansas, for example, Nebraska.
Right.
Maybe in my imagination, you needed to become familiar with what you have over there in
absolutely.
Your surroundings.
Yeah,
because the terrain can be your best ally or your worst enemy, as I stress out in my MOOCs, and I also upload a video on YouTube today with that title.
Very good, cool, thank you. And speaking of books, what are a few books you might recommend if someone wants to start learning man tracking or read a good story, whatever books you might recommend on man tracking?
Well, I bring with me, as I showed you before, the book by Mike. I don't want to make a promotion, but it's a really good book. It's very well layered. It has good images and colors, which is not so common in tracking manuals. And it's a good resource, indeed. But if you want to get more at the very first book, on tracking, this is the book. Because this book has been written back in the 70s, and this man, Jack Kearney, he used to be a border patrol officer, and he just wrote down a manual which is so current still nowadays. It is extremely good. And I think people can find it on Amazon because it's been reprinted. But it is still
wonderful. Yeah, so this book, for those who are listening, this is Tracking, A Blueprint for Learning How by Jack Kearney, right? And I didn't know that was back in print because I looked for that a couple years ago and it was like, I don't know, 60, 70 bucks somewhere. So so I'm glad to know it's back in print, and we'll put a link to that for sure.
It should be, if I am pretty much sure, but even if... By the way, you can find also the PDF version.
Oh, wonderful.
In case you just have to print it, because it's all black and white, as you can see.
Right, okay.
But it's an amazing book, really. And the two other books that I truly recommend, I don't want to sound, partial with my choice.
You can be as partial as you want, Kit. It's okay.
Okay. No, because I really appreciate all the books on track.
Of course.
Because
of course.
The books has got some very good aspects covered, something new, something all of this sometimes. But this is my personal selection. Okay. So this is a book that you unfortunately can't find in print because of them. Only 100 copies has been printed back in the day.
Is
good for, it is actually the only one existing on based on anti-poaching. And as you can see, that's Jack Kearney. So the author of this book collaborated with Nelman, right, to write down this book.
Okay, and this one is called Sign and the Art of Tracking. And it's a guide to support law enforcement tracking and anti-poaching operations.
Exactly. Okay. But also this book, you can find it in PDF on the internet.
So wonderful.
You just have to type it and you will find it.
Cool. I'll put the links to that as well in the show notes.
Okay. And the last one is to give also the English, kind of not version, but the English feature of tracking is this one from Bob Carr's.
The Complete Guide to Tracking, Following Tracks, Trails and Signs, Concealment, Night Movements, and All Forms of Pursuit.
Mm-hmm. You have some huge SAS tips and tools of the trade, tricks on the trade as well inside this book. And you have also a good part which is dedicated to stalking, how to leave a minimum tracks and a good part on profiling too, which is more closer to forensic, to FBI, CIA, and so on. But sometimes tracking and forensic can work really good together.
Very good. Awesome. Well, thank you for that, Kit. That's very helpful. And how can people further connect with you and your work and the things you're doing?
Well, let me say that I'm too much on the web. I even annoy myself. I'm too much everywhere.
Well, that means you're very accessible to everyone else. So that's a good thing.
In Italy, where you are too much around, we say you're like the parsley. You know the parsley? Because we put the parsley everywhere where we have to season meat.
Is that Italian? Is that an Italian saying? You're like the parsley?
You're like the parsley. You find everywhere.
That's good. I like that.
By the way, I have an official website, which is called thewayoftracking.com. On that website, you can find all the links to LinkedIn, to Twitter. Facebook, I'm sorry, Instagram, my YouTube channel, and all my publications, and so on. If you subscribe to my website, I will send you a password to access to a download area where you can download something like 70 between books and manuals and documents. But let me stress out that they aren't classified at all. So they're public resources that just found on the internet. I just grab them and put it all together in a just one.
That sounds like a great resource. That's perfect. Everything in one package.
Yeah, exactly. And that's it, because this is my channel. And if you want to give a look also to Michael's website, is coolstrackingschool.com, but you obviously find the link on my website as well.
Perfect. Well, I'll have all that in the show notes. And thank you so much, Kit, for coming on and telling us more about tracking, and appreciate all your knowledge and your work online and elsewhere. And we'll look forward to connecting with you again in the future.
Thanks a lot. I'm also available for any Italian cuisine lessons.
Awesome.
Lasagna and whatever you have in mind, we can do it together.
Sounds great.
Okay, right. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate that you invited me for this podcast. And I say hello to all the people that will listen to this.
Awesome. Thanks, Kit.
Well, friends, that's a wrap for this episode. Really glad you joined me and Kit for this discussion. And of course, any feedback that you might have, please feel free to send it to me. And please go and check out Kit's feeds on. She's got all kinds of stuff going on the Way of Tracking Facebook page and website and all that kind of stuff. She has a lot going on online, so feel free to check her out. I put some really, really fun links in the show notes, especially to the page that she has on her website with all kinds of free downloads for man tracking and just tracking in general. There's really a ton of stuff on there. It's really quite impressive, all the amazing things that she's collected that are free to download. So definitely go check that out if you want to learn more about tracking in general and man tracking in particular. There's quite a bit there. So definitely check that out and sign up for her newsletter and all that good stuff. And as always, feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions or concerns or feedback of any kind. You can do that at ron@coyotespath.com. You can also check us out on Facebook and Instagram. I'm not super active on there, but I am there. I do get messages there. I do, of course, post the episodes there. So definitely check us out there. And please, 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 if you find value in any of this, leave us a review wherever it is that you're accessing this podcast, especially on Apple Podcasts. It's super helpful. It gets us up in their algorithms and helps other people find the podcast and get this message as well. So I've got some fun stuff coming up for you. Got some really, really cool things in the pipe. even a little bit on my thesis, which is on wildlife trackers. So I actually did my thesis presentation recently. So I might take the audio from that and put it on here, and you might get something out of it. I don't know. It'll be better. It would be better with the visuals, of course. But anyways, we'll see how that goes. So thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you on the trail.